It's all fun and games until someone gets a brain injury. Brett Favre calls it getting your bell rung. And bells are ringing a whole lot more than we ever realized in football, sports, in war, and it is far from a joyful noise. Tonight on Banfield, the great Brett Favre, as well as Kurt Warner and Mark Rippon, on the staggering toll of brain trauma and the potential breakthroughs for treating it. Hello and welcome to Banfield. Iron Mike Webster was a tough guy in a field where toughness is a given. It's actually a baseline requirement. He was a star center of the Pittsburgh Steelers, considered by many the greatest center ever to play pro football. He won 4 Super Bowls. He played in 9 Pro Bowls. And eventually he retired and then lapsed into depression, amnesia, finally dementia. Iron Mike died in 2002 at the young age of 50. And a brilliant pathologist who knew nothing about football did an autopsy. Dr. Bennett Omalu found damage to Mike Webster's brain unlike what he had expected. He called it chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE. He told the NFL, but the NFL didn't want to hear about it. The players did, though, and the players' families really did. And a little over a decade later, the league would agree to pay almost $1 billion to retired players who were suffering just like Iron Mike was. It sounds a bit like the plot of a movie, because it was the plot of a movie, in fact. In 2015, a movie called Concussion, Will Smith played the real Dr. Omalu, explaining the effects of literally thousands of blows to the head that Mike Webster endured in his football years.
All of this triggered a cascading series of neurological events which unleashed killer proteins upon Mike Webster's brain. The tangles invading and strangling his mind from the inside out, like pouring wet concrete down kitchen pipes as it hardens.
Since Webster's death and Dr. Omalu's discovery, the signs and the effects and the consequences of CTE have been richly documented. And the list of deceased former players found to have been afflicted with CTE has swelled. Far too many, actually, for me to even name right here tonight. But tonight I am joined by 3 former players, 3 superstars, who each has an experience with brain injury and who each is involved in the search for a safe and effective treatment. Brett Favre is a one-man highlight reel. In 20 seasons, Brett was a starting quarterback in 321 consecutive games, a league record. He was an NFL MVP 3 years in a row, and in 1997, he led the Green Bay Packers to their first Super Bowl win in 3 decades. The final play of Brett's stellar career was a hard hit that knocked him out cold, and we're going to talk about that hit in just a moment. Mark Rippon is the first Canadian quarterback to start in the NFL and to later be named Super Bowl MVP. That was 1992. Mark was so good at deep passes, the sports writers used to joke that he could play catch with someone 60 yards away, someone who was sitting down. In his post-football years, Rippon and his family have suffered with a host of mental health issues that Rippon blames on football and the NFL. And Kurt Warner, the NFL's ultimate Cinderella story. Shunned and unloved in the 1994 draft, Warner waited 4 long years to debut with the St. Louis Rams, where he became not just the first undrafted quarterback to lead his team to a Super Bowl win, but the first undrafted player of any position to be named Super Bowl and NFL MVP. And he took his knocks along the way. You can almost feel the impact through the TV screen. Gentlemen, all 3 of you together, I feel this is just a plethora of well. Thank you all. Brett, if I can start with you, I think for a lot of people, they've heard about CTE. They may have even heard the longer term. But generally speaking, I think the biggest question is, how many hits did you take that you think may have been at the level that would actually be an issue regarding CTE?
Well, first of all, I watched those highlights, and if I haven't forgotten, those two guys were good. Curtin, Mark, man. Mark Rippon took some, he took the longest drops I've ever seen in passes, but the guy, he could throw the deep ball, and Kurt was unbelievable. But as far as hits go, I don't know how you come up with a number. A lot. There's a lot. I played 20 years. My first year, I didn't play any. So let's say 19 years. The average game has roughly 70 offensive plays. So 70 times 16, you know, you start doing the math. And how many of those plays of the 70 do you think that you got hit? I'd say it's fair to say 20 to 30 and per game. And Mark and Kurt, I think they will agree. You know, not all pass plays you get hit. Certainly not all run plays you get hit. But I can say this. There wasn't one game that I can remember where I did that I was playing in where I didn't have my bell rung. You know, and that's such a vague comment, statement. What used to be just a general loose term, I got my bell rung, all right? You know, I saw some stars or fireworks, has later become a serious issue. And so much so that there's protocol, there's things in place to try to alleviate the concussion problem. But that being said, there's no treatment out there. They're yeah. trying prevention. And prevention, you're not going to prevent. Concussions are going to happen, whether it be football, soccer, the playground, military, NASCAR, the common day, you slip on the icy sidewalk and hit your head. I mean, you name it.
So what's interesting, Brett, I know that you've been suffering from memory loss. I don't know if you have that that personal debate that I often have with myself because I forget a lot of stuff, too.
The 50-year-old debate?
Yeah, that's the one. You know it well, right? But I do wonder if you look at yours and you think, just a minute, I think a lot of this might have to do less with me being in my 50s and more with me having been knocked around and euphemistically, you know, having my bell rung.
Good question. You know, had I not played football and forgot where I left my car or forgot that I left my phone in the refrigerator, I would say it's hell turning 50. So I can't tell you with 100% certainty that memory loss and things, some of the things that I may be feeling are not just related to being 50 years old. So I know this, that being hit in the head as many times as I and Kurt and Mark and all the other players that have played, whether you play pro football or not, if you play college or high school, it only takes one hit, only one of the right hits to change your anatomy forever. But you know, certainly hundreds of hits, thousands of hits that your bell was rung, you saw stars, you felt a little fuzzy, are not good. You know, there's nothing that can come out of those in the future that are good.
Yeah, and the mystery of CTE, you know, it's solved upon autopsy. That's what's so hard. You know, at this point, it would be great if we could all go in and get a perfect answer. But Mark, let me ask you about how you have felt since playing football. I think you've really, you know, been through the ringer. You've suffered a lot of different ailments. You even at one point, as I understand, tried to take your own life after depression and anxiety and frustration. Walk me through a little bit of that and tell me what you think in terms of its connection potentially to CTE.
Well, first, Ashley, thank you for being able to bring this to light, and it's just an honor and a privilege to have share this platform with both Brett and Kurt. I have an opportunity to talk about something that, you know, obviously is very close to each and every one of us. And Brett touched on the amount of hits we have endured over our careers, the effects that they might have and they have had. And what can we do to make our lives a little bit better, a little bit easier? I think the cumulative effects that we have taken in sports, whether it be playing basketball, playing football, playing baseball, and all the way through youth to college, to pros, to even after, you know, I play a little beer league hockey now, and you know, even though it's a non-checking league, still, you know, there's collisions, and your body is moved in different ways it's not supposed to be, and then your brain, being the type of organism that it is, and basically a jello up there shaking and moving. I think what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish here, is to alleviate some of that and basically give an opportunity, a chance for the swelling of the brain, whether it be through the drug Prevacis, to alleviate some of that swelling, and also the long-term effects that it can offer to athletes, and a little bit of the relief it can have to moms and dads whose sons and daughters are playing in sports. So this has just been great. I've had my issues and will continue to have issues, but I think one of the things that I've had the opportunity to get in front of some of the best professionals out there. I did a documentary with Andrew Marr called Quiet Explosions, and I'd recommend that to anyone that gets an opportunity to see that, to watch it. The different modalities that this documentary shows to civilians, our servicemen. Andrew's a Green Beret that served our country, and also was on the bomb squad and in Afghanistan, and came back and basically was in his closet for 3-4 days, not knowing whether or not he would come out of that with a family of seven. And to see the different modalities that he used, whether it be Dr. Gordon, his hormonal therapy, or hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatment, TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation, that I've used, and along with working with Dr. Amon to talk about your health, your body health, your brain health, and all configures to having a life where you're eating well, and you know, as football players, one of the things they try to teach you is they want to have you to eat a certain way, and I think that's important for your brain health.
We're actually going to talk to Dr. Amon, who you just mentioned, in this program as well. And thank you for that. I do want to just quickly mention the Prevacis, which you mentioned. Brett and Mark and Kurt are all in some way involved in Prevacis, whether it's investment or just involvement. And to that end, Kurt, talk to me a little bit about your concussion in 2000 was severe. And you turn to your faith and you credit God for your resolution, if there is such a thing as resolution. I really don't know. Do you think ahead in your life thinking, God, is this where, am I going to be different in 5 years, different in 10 years? Is CTE going to ravage me? Why did I play football? Do you go through these thoughts?
I think you wrestle back and forth, Ashley, with that whole thing, is that you look to one side. I know Mark and Brett would say the same thing, is what the game gave you and the blessings that it gave you and your family and all of those things. But there is no question about it. As we know more, as we learn more, that I'm constantly wondering, what does my future have in store for me? And my family's always watching it. They've heard all of these different things. You know, you're talking to Brett earlier about, you know, turning 50 or, you know, forgetting where your keys are or where you left your phone. And, you know, I know that my family, and they've mentioned it numerous times, they wonder if something like that happens with me. Okay, is that just getting something, or is that the onset of something more serious? So we all consider it. We all think about it. You know, I think back to my career, and, you know, part of me is very fortunate. When I was going through it, you know, I didn't play 19 years like Brett did. I didn't take the number of hits that Brett did. Did I take some big hits? Of course I did. But you look back, you know, when it's all said and done, and sometimes you're grateful, you know, for the times that you're not playing, now that you understand the bigger picture here. And so, you know, I think most guys that have played the game are starting to think that way. And would it change whether we chose to play and do what we did? Probably not. But I think we might do it differently. And that's what you're starting to see in the league. You're starting to see it at lower levels. Is we know better. We're trying to do better. But Brett alluded to it. We're not going to eliminate it. If you continue to play this game, you continue to live the different issues that we have, you know, all kinds of different things in our country and around the world that are going to create concussions. So we're not going to eliminate it. So now what can we do to try to help that? And, you know, one of my issues, too, is not just playing football. I've got a son that suffered a traumatic brain injury when he was 4 months old. And we think back to that time and say to ourselves, if there was something we could have done to stop the swelling, to stop the bleeding in his brain in the early stages, how would his life be different? And that's a big reason why I'm involved, you know, with Odyssey and Prevacus and Prevastol and trying to figure out something that when one of these injuries happen, what can we do? Is there something we can create that can maybe help to slow the process, stop the process, so we don't have some of this long-term damage that we've been talking about?
I'm glad you brought up that, you know, if the game is going to keep being played, this is going to keep on happening. Guys, I'm going to squeeze in a quick break, but I'm going to come back with you in a minute because it's one thing, Brett, to, you know, forget your keys. It's a whole other thing when you hear about players who have taken their lives, who were involved in crime or dangerous behavior, etc., and apply that to the players who are living and the players who are playing. So we're going to dig into those questions in just a moment.
Unlike other concussions, you may feel a little starry-eyed, but you'll have a general idea of where you are and so forth. This was rather extreme. I just had no recollection of the whole day.
That was former backup quarterback Wayne Clark, one of the five living ex-players to take part in a groundbreaking 2013 study on CTE, describing his worst concussion ever. We are continuing to talk football, hard hits, and the potentially debilitating consequences of repeated blows to the head. And my guests are superstars Brett Favre, Kurt Warner, and Mark Rypien. Gentlemen, thanks for staying with me. Brett, can I just ask you about the things that we've just been talking about? Is football going to eventually, maybe not right away, but is football eventually going to look really different? Is it going to change? Are the rules going to change?
I think they are changing. Seems like there's new rule changes each and every year. And one of those, it seems like, that changes each year is how they protect the quarterback. And that's a good thing. I mean, now I think all the retired guys, the running joke is you don't even have to tackle a guy to get flagged. You just you whisper in his ear and you get flagged. So I think the rules are changing and they will continue to change and they'll continue to get what they call better helmets. But, you know, the one thing that is also changing is the player. They're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. Next year, they'll be bigger, faster, and stronger than they were the previous year. When I went to Green Bay in 1992, our average line was about 295. And the average line weight in the first Super Bowl was 230 or 225. There's not many quarterbacks in the National Football League today that weigh less than 225, if any. So it's bound to get you at some point. When a 350-pound guy hits you who's running much faster than you can run, the helmet can only do so much. So I don't know if the game's going to look a whole lot different because it'll be a slow, gradual change, much like it has been. But it will continue to change.
You know, I look at the stories of guys like Dave Duerson from the Chicago Bears who shot himself and directed that his brain be, you know, donated to research. And they found that he suffered from CTE. Aaron Hernandez was a story I covered. It was just a horrendous series of crimes that he was wound up in. And in prison, he hanged himself. And sure enough, the autopsy showed he was one of the worst cases of CTE ever. And then there's Jovan Belcher, Kansas City Chiefs. He killed his girlfriend. That's Aaron Hernandez on the screen. But Jovan Belcher killed his girlfriend in 2012 and then drove to the Chiefs training facility, shot himself in the head in front of his head coach and GM, and sure enough, medical examiner discovered that Belcher suffered from CTE. I feel like those are such wake-up calls. Mark Rypien, jump in here, because, you know, Brett tells these, you know, stories of what happened to him and losing the keys and wondering what's going to happen with football when we move ahead. But you yourself, you tried to take your own life, and but for the love of your wife who discovered you, you might not be here to talk to me today. When you hear those stories of those three other guys and the other stories of attempted suicides among other players, isn't that big enough to say we got to do something bigger and bolder about the game?
Well, that's why we're on this call, Ashley, and that's why we're so appreciative of you bringing to light something that is means a lot to all of us. Steve McMichaels and the Steve Gleasons of this world are living testimony of what concussions in football can do to your brain. And they're living with ALS and are incredible advocates for ALS and a debilitating disease where your mind's 100% intact, your body is just not there. You being a Canadian, Ashley, know that my young cousin, Rick Rypien, who was had the world at his feet playing the NHL.
Hockey player in the NHL, yeah. Right? Rick, and not only your cousin Rick, but also your daughter Angela. She's suffered the ill effects of concussions from being a quarterback
in the laundry football league. Yeah. Yep, and has his shoulder issues, you know, much like we have, and the aches and pains. But you know, she also had some hits, and that she has some issues herself, mental health issues herself, and in periods of times that she's not doing well. So I think all of this, when you look at the bottom line, is we can't do enough, but we're doing more. I know the rules have changed. I mean, the rules nowadays, I mean, both Brett and Kurt could probably play and take a team to a Super Bowl in this era of rule changes to protect the quarterback and also defenseless players like wide receivers and running backs. I don't know how running backs and linebackers make it through a season. I mean, they're involved in a car crash literally every single play, helmet to helmet, and we just need to do more, and we are doing more. We're doing what we can, and I think the league is trying to do what they can to at least bring light to something that is very, very difficult for all of us.
Yeah, you know, Kurt, jump in here, because when you hear Mark talk about, you know, his cousin Rick and his daughter Angela, and you guys have your stories, and then I told you those, you know, Aaron and Jovan and Dave's stories. I wonder, you know, whether the NFL has done enough. I get it. The settlement was huge. It was $1 billion, but that's done. And we're still seeing players banging around on the field. And we're still seeing a lot of players having horrendous end of life. So I keep nailing at this question about the game. I know America loves the game. Everybody loves football. But if it makes people suffer and die, should the game change profoundly, I guess, is the question.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of those questions that's hard to answer. I think all of us know that the game's not going anywhere anytime soon. And so the point of all of this is to go, okay, you asked if the NFL had done enough. I think there was a large period of time where NFL players, we were all trying to sweep this under the rug. We were all taking the mentality that, okay, you're tough. You go out there, you get your bell rung, whatever that may be. You got to show up and go play for your guys. I believe that mentality has changed to a degree. And it's guys like Brett and Mark stepping up and speaking out on these things. It's rule changes, as Brett already alluded to, is that for so long, I don't think there was enough done. I don't think we understood enough. What we did understand, we pushed it to the side. I think that's all changing now. And that, to me, is going to be a huge part of this process moving forward, is more and more people stepping up, more and more people reaching out. The NFL and other leagues saying, okay, we have got to continue to make changes. Will it be dramatic? Will the game look dramatically different 5 years, 10 years from now? I don't have an answer to that. But in the meantime, we know this is going to continue to happen. So what changes can we make? What things can we do? How can we speak out to make a difference, to speak to different people that have some of those concerns, that are dealing with some of those issues? And it's really why we're here today, is that there's really, as Brett was saying, you can always be reactionary. Okay, got my bell rung, something happened. Okay, now I'm going to sit out a game. I'm going to go through, you know, some different tests. We're going to go through the protocol and make sure that we're fully healthy. But what do we do when there is a concussion, when that injury happens? And that is where we believe that we're a part of something that's groundbreaking, and something that we hope, because we're not avoiding it, once again, we're not going to be able to avoid concussions, we hope can help the process and not lead to some of these issues that you're talking about that are sad. And you sit back, being a big part of the game and being an advocate for the game for so long, you never want to hear the stories that you shared, never want to hear those issues happening with anybody. And so we're all here today to go, okay, we need to do more. We need to continue to make improvements. And we want to get behind drugs like Prevacil that say, hey, maybe we can help in the beginning part of this process when the injury happens. Maybe there's something we can do to prevent those long-term issues that we're hearing more and more about.
So if any of our viewers right now have kids who play not just football, but listen, soccer is also an issue. The headbutting of the soccer ball has been an issue for male soccer players. A lot of female soccer players with the muscles in the neck that aren't quite as strong are experiencing even more of it than the men in their sport. But if there are parents who are thinking about it right now, and you got kids in soccer, you got kids in football, you got kids in hockey, or any of these other sports where there's contact, the big question, guys, and we're going to talk about it after the break, becomes, what about concussion treatment? So that's coming up after the break. And then I'm going to ask all three of you next. We're that age, right, where we have kids and grandkids. I'm going to ask you if you are happy about the idea of your kids and grandkids playing football or any of those other sports. Back in a moment with Brett and Mark and Kurt. Back with Brett, Kurt, and Mark. I feel like we're all on a first name basis now. And the story of CTE in the NFL, and not just the NFL either, all those other sports too. Brett, I'm going to start with you on that tough, tough question. Kids and grandkids, people you love, would you want them to play the sport of football or any other high contact sport?
Well, I do have three grandsons, 11, 7, and 3. And The talk has never gotten to football. The two oldest have played baseball. Not once has any of the three said, I want to play football. I'm not going to bring it up, to be honest with you. If they choose to play, that's between them, their mother, and their father. I will support, however, or whatever they choose, but I am not going to push or press the issue to play. And I've said that in the past publicly, and you know, some people are like, oh, I can't believe he would say that. The guy who started 321 straight games or whatever. That's why I'm saying it. I know what can happen from the violent hits, especially at a young age. We certainly don't need tackle football in 7 to 15 year olds. So I guess
the question is, would you prefer they didn't? I know you won't talk them into it, but would you prefer they didn't?
Look, I'd much rather be their caddy in golf. And I tell people that all the time, but I'm telling you, being 100% honest, I would cringe every time they got tackled. I wasn't so much worried when it was me. But now that, you know, I'm looking at my grandsons, I just know what the repercussions can be I'm not saying that they will be, but that they can be.
So, Mark, same question for you. Kids, grandkids, et cetera, would you want them to play football and high-contact sports like this?
I have a grandson that's 3 and a granddaughter that's 11 or 12. Actually, just turned 12 playing basketball. And I encourage them to get involved in sports, with contact sports. I'm very, I guess I'm cautious just to understand and try to be as preventative as possible as far as the age. I think Brett touched on it, that I'm an advocate for tackle football not being started till they're in their high school years. I think they can learn the X's and O's of the game, the strategy of the game, and let their brain have as much time to process things and be able to, you know, when they do, if they decide and willing to play, that they're that they're ready for it. So I'm okay. I'm okay with my grandson playing hockey. I'm okay with him playing football, but I'm also going to be very on the advocate side of safety and being able to make sure that when they are playing, that they're playing within a framework that is going to allow them. And also, there's also going to be things now available for families and players. Prevysol, a cream that is a kind of a preventative cream, and then Prevacus if there is a concussive injury that they can apply and take nasally, that'll help alleviate some of the swelling so they don't have long-term effects like us.
And I'll talk about that actually in a minute, but I've got a minute left, Kurt, and I want to know your answer too, and it's only a minute. Sorry about that, but I want to know what you think about that question.
It's all right. I actually have 2 boys that are playing. I have one that's playing in college and one that's playing in high school that wants to play in college and play professionally. My take on it more than anything is to make sure that they're educated on the risks. I actually started coaching when they started playing because I wanted to be at the forefront and watch them when they came off the field and have that communication with them and be able to notice some of these issues if there was an issue that arose throughout a game. And so my boys do play. I love the game. I love the things, as I said earlier, that it has presented to me, what it's taught me, the person that it's made me. But I do look at it differently, you know, with a dad hat on as opposed to a helmet on. And I have to understand those concerns, and I go into it and communicate with them about those concerns as well.
I think you said dad hat. We had a little bit of dropout, but I pretty much knew exactly what you were saying. Guys, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this really important issue. Brett Favre, Kurt Warner, and Mark Rippon, thank you. Thank you all. I really appreciate it. And I hope you stay safe. Straight ahead, the science behind CTE and the search for a safe and easy and effective form of treatment. We're going to dig in with the scientists and the doctors next. When helmets fail, whether in football, other sports, or even in battle, or maybe places where helmets aren't even worn, catastrophic brain injuries can happen. And conventional medicine can't really do a lot to help. That's where my next guests come in. Jacob Van Landingham is a biomedical scientist and former FSU professor who now works full-time developing a nasal spray that blunts the effects of head trauma. Dr. Daniel Amen is a psychiatrist, best-selling author, and founder of a chain of clinics that study and treat brain injuries and mental disorders. Doctors, both, welcome to you. Dr. Van Landingham, let me start with you. First of all, our audience should know that you yourself suffered a traumatic brain injury. It was not a sports-related one. It was an attacker who had hit you. But I wonder if that sort of propelled you into this field and if that sort of led you to, as I understand it, the discovery of this drug, Prevysol, that the football players I was just speaking with have been talking about and touting.
Yes. Well, Ashley, thanks for having me so much tonight. It did. I mean, obviously, I was assaulted. I had 3 hemorrhages in my brain, and I had a lot of brain swelling, which is a little bit different than what you see with concussion. But I was involved much earlier working with brain injured children from a physical improvement standpoint. And then I went on to be involved in clinical trials using intravenous drugs for severe brain injury. And now sort of that has propelled into trying to find a a drug that can help acutely on the field of play and during those first week or two after the concussion, try to prevent some of the long-term consequences that occur from concussion.
So what does Prevacel do exactly? And is it this magic panacea? Because they feel as though conventional medicine says we can't do a whole lot if you have a concussion. And then along comes Prevacel. And I'm sort of wondering, so how long till it becomes conventional, or is it still kind of questionable?
Well, I think a lot of the problem in the past has been that, you know, concussions just get better. I think we probably see about 15% of people develop long-term problems, whether that's attention deficit disorder, depression, learning disabilities, post-concussion syndrome. And then we hear a lot today about CTE in early stage dementia. But for what we're looking for is to get a drug in there fast that can stop the inflammation, swelling, and oxidative stress that's occurring in these brain cells after the traumatic event. So we believe that if you treat it early and get this pathological cascade under control, that we will hopefully see better outcomes and reduce the consequences of something that may happen long term.
So, Dr. Amen, I want you to jump in. Well, we've been watching the graphics, and Dr. Van Landingham has been telling us it looked like, you know, this forest of brain tissue was dying, and then it looked like a drug came along and brought it all back to life. And I want to think that truly is happening. Do we know that? And I should also say the drug is Prevacel. You probably saw Prevacis up on our screen. That's the company, but the drug is Prevacel. Do we know that we can actually reverse this kind of damage, or is this still really cutting edge and not fully tried and tested?
Well, it is cutting edge, but at Amen Clinics, we actually did the first and largest brain imaging study on active and retired NFL players. Mark Griffin was one of our players. We've scanned and treated 300 of them. And there's high levels of damage. And I think everybody sort of recognizes that now. When we started in 2008, it was really controversial. But I think everybody sort of gets the message. Football's a brain damaging sport. But 80% of our players get better when we put them on a rehabilitation program. And I haven't used Prevacel. We've used hyperbaric oxygen, a group of supplements like N-acetylcysteine, omega-3 fatty acids to decrease inflammation. And I'm really hopeful. I was a consultant on the movie Concussion, and I love Dr. Malu. We have published together, but I was sort of horrified that they didn't leave you feeling any hope. And so a lot of current and former players, they're like, oh, I don't want to know, because they don't want to lose hope. But if you put the brain in a healing environment, it can get better.
So, Dr. Amen, I know that you've been specializing in mood and behavior disorders and brain injuries, and that you use a kind of a PET scan called SPECT, S-P-E-C-T. It's not without its critics, though, right? I don't have to tell you that, you know, the American Psychiatric Association had said that it has yet to impact significantly the diagnosis or treatment of individuals and patients. And there have been other critics who've sort of downplayed the SPECT as well. But again, it's a hope thing, right? And it's a science we don't know a lot about, and we all desperately want a solution. Is this just a matter of, you know, the medical professionals don't all agree yet, or the medical professionals haven't yet done enough, research and development on it yet?
No, if you go to PubMed today, there are 15,000 scientific studies on SPECT as it relates to head trauma, depression, dementia. The Canadian Association of Nuclear Medicine just 2 weeks ago wrote a new position paper on brain SPECT imaging, basically as if I wrote it, endorsing it to look at traumatic brain injury, resistant psychiatric disorders, dementia. And with the American Psychiatric Association, they're very wed to their diagnostic system. But think of it. Most psychiatrists make diagnoses based on symptom clusters with no biological information. somebody should be suspicious about that. That I can actually give you medicine, change your brain, but I actually don't know the baseline. And I'm very excited. I think the future is going to be imaging. And that's why I looked. I mean, I'm an Army trained psychiatrist, and I didn't know that mild traumatic brain injury is a major cause of psychiatric illness until I started looking at the brain. And then I became horrified that probably 40% of people struggling with resistant depression had a significant brain injury before they were depressed. And it's big deal because the 3 million new traumatic brain injuries every year in the United States. And I think many of my colleagues think there's a huge connection between traumatic brain injury and mental health challenges.
I want to get into that in a minute, Dr. Amen and Dr. Van Landingham. After the break, I want to ask for parents who are watching right now, oh my Lord, if my child had a concussion, is this where we're headed? What are the odds? What are the chances? I want you to sort of, you know, lay it out for them and let them know what they need to know about brain injuries, mood disorders, and the future. We're back with researcher and brain injury survivor, Dr. Jacob Van Landingham, who works full-time on developing a nasal spray that blunts the effects of head trauma. So, Doctor, a simple question. Is football safe for kids or anybody else for that matter?
You know, for kids whose brains haven't fully developed, when they have a concussion or a mild traumatic brain injury, they actually have a longer time getting over it than adults, especially adults over the age of 21. So I would say to be safe, I certainly wouldn't let my children play contact sports until they were 13. When I say contact sports, I think more of helmets and pads and tackle football.
Well, for those who did play football in high school or college, and perhaps for those who suffered concussions from any trauma, how worried should they be right now about CTE damage that may already be done to their brains? And is there anything they can do to mitigate that?
Well, I think the rule is you should stop playing a sport if you've had three or more concussions, certainly in the season, and you should not play that sport again because your brain is genetically susceptible to head injury. I certainly think that someone who plays for a longer period of time, the more likely even the subconcussive events, the ones that don't get diagnosed, add up and lead to this type of pathology where we're seeing early stage dementia and early mortality.
Do you think that enough is being talked about in the press and among players and parents and the government right now to make sure that people know the risks?
Well, I think you see it a lot in professional sports over the last few years where it has been a focus. And I do think they've done a very good job of changing some of the rules. But with football, for example, you're always going to have concussions. A helmet's not going to prevent a concussion, but to maybe 20%, 25% yeah. reduction in risk. So if you're going to play, you need to understand that you do have a susceptibility to get a concussion, and there could be a long-term consequence.
I have to leave it there, unfortunately. But thank you so much, Dr. Van Landingham. And thank you also to Brett Favre and Mark Rippon and Kurt Warner and Dr. Daniel Amen. And thanks for you as well for watching. We'll be back tomorrow.